The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Busy, busy day here at Edstone with classes. Earlier this morning, we recorded a TV program for later on this weekend. We'll probably use some of that information or some of that content coming up in the second segment. But to begin with, another political earthquake, yet another one, this time in Ireland. They had the vote over the weekend, but because of a complicated electoral college system of some kind, it takes two or three days to complete the vote. It's not as bad as Iowa, by the way, but still, 2 days. And we learned that Sinn Féin is now the second largest party in the Republic. You know about Sinn Féin. That's the political wing of the IRA. That's like the terrorist wing of the Irish government. Fianna Fáil, that's the main party. They won the election by the narrowest of margins, finishing off with 38 seats in the parliament or whatever their government is called over there. But Sinn Féin came in with 37 seats. 37, just one seat behind Fianna Fáil. And so now they've got the same story in Ireland, really, that we're seeing in quite a few other places. The mainstream parties suffering, struggling along. And then the more radical parties on the fringe, they're shocking the nation. They're shocking the world in some cases. It's pretty amazing. We had this story play out last week in Germany, there in Thuringia. But it's been happening in Spain and Italy and other places as well. And as Richard mentioned this morning, it's hard to see how that they're going to build a stable government, because Sinn Féin, just like with the AfD in Germany, has generally been shunned by the major parties. But now, as I said last week and this week with respect to the AfD, and of course, this is history repeating itself, the 1930s history repeating itself, as these fringe parties gain in popularity, as they gain the momentum, well, then the more major mainstream parties, they have to work with them. They have to build some kind of coalition. And what's fascinating here is that because this is Ireland, there's the wrinkle with respect to Northern Ireland as well. That's part of the UK. But Sinn Féin up in Northern Ireland, that's the second largest party behind the DUP as well. So you can only imagine the push for unity in Ireland, to bring Northern Ireland into the Republic, that's only going to gain in strength. And of course, that was what drove the so-called troubles of the 1960s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, when the conflict over Northern Ireland so often resulted in violence led by Sinn Féin. And that only simmered down once Tony Blair sat down with the terrorists. He negotiated peace with the terrorists. And at the time, of course, at the Trumpet, we were saying this is not a good foundation for peace. It's not good to sit down across the negotiating table with Hamas or with Hezbollah, or in this case with Sinn Féin. This is what we wrote in response to the Good Friday Agreement back in 1998. This takes us back 22 years. The late Ron Fraser, he was right on top of this subject, had several articles over the years, over the late 1990s, about the struggles, the problems, the trials in Ireland and with Northern Ireland. The article title, Terror Triumphant, it says here, this is Mr. Fraser, "The sham of this peace agreement, brokered via almost 22 months of talks between the British and Irish governments and led by President Clinton's handpicked negotiator, George Mitchell. So the U.S. had a heavy influence on this as well. Mr. Fraser says, seems to be largely unperceived by the majority of Irish peoples, political commentators, and the media. At its best, it is a most shameful capitulation to the forces of terrorism. And so often that's been the case in the West. Just give in, cave in to the demands of the terrorists. We saw it in the lead up to World War II. We saw a lot of it in the previous administration. We'll see more, I'm sure. Mr. Fraser said in 1998, at its worst, it contains the sinister seeds of destruction of the very peace that it's touted to produce. Well, we'll see if that forecast plays out. The trumpet, remember, tomorrow's news today, as we've been saying in recent weeks, over and again. And now you've got Sinn Féin. Here's the political arm of the terrorists in Ireland. And they're coming out with these kinds of stunning results. 37 seats, just one behind the lead party. Mr. Fraser said, the plain fact is that given a few years, the Protestant majority in Ulster will be overwhelmed by the much more rapidly reproducing Catholic minority. It's simply a matter of time. The Catholic nationalists will simply populate the Ulster Irish out of existence as a province separate from the rest of Ireland. And of course, you see these same breakaway movements in Scotland, the U.S. just fracturing, splitting apart, not unlike the royal family in Britain. We'll get to that in the next segment. We've got the Belfast Pack coming up, not this weekend, but the next. And as it turns out, that's coming up at a pretty good time. Richard's going to help me compile some material for that pack. As we've got trumpet readers in Northern Ireland, we don't have quite as many in the Republic. But they need God's truth. They need God's warning, just as sure as the rest of us. Where will this political earthquake lead? What will be the aftershocks of this one? Well, a good place to start would be with those trumpet articles from back in the late 1990s. The seeds of a future conflict, they were planted back then. So we know where this is leading. Well, switching to the United States, today is the New Hampshire primary. And you've got all of the Democrat candidates duking it out, and no one really is coming to the forefront. I guess the polls are just kind of all over the place. But it's interesting, really, there's no contested primary or election for the president. And yet he goes to New Hampshire last night, and people were lining up by the thousands, camping overnight outside in the frigid temperatures so that they could see a Donald Trump rally that really doesn't even mean anything politically, other than it takes away from the Democrats being in the spotlight. But aside from that, it's really not something that President Trump needs. And yet the turnout, listen to MSNBC as they talk about the size of this crowd at your typical Trump rally. Clip two.
As 2020 Democrats are in this frantic race to the finish here, guess who's swooping in to try to steal the spotlight? President Trump is set to arrive tonight for a rally here in Manchester. Quite an unusual move for an incumbent president who is certain to win his party's nomination again. And in a hint of how large the crowd likely will be, we're already seeing his supporters lined up. They braved the cold overnight to make sure they got a good spot in the arena, and there are more of them already joining this morning.
I wonder how many people braved the cold overnight to see Joe Biden or Elizabeth Warren. There was a clip, by the way, of Elizabeth Warren walking into a diner, and everybody in there, they basically had no reaction. She was kind of forcing her way into some of these conversations at the various tables. This is New Hampshire. They're not having a great few weeks following Iowa. We'll see what the results will be from today's primary. But here's what ABC, notice how they try to, they do acknowledge some facts up front, but then they do try to downplay some of Donald Trump's popularity in the latter part of this clip. This is clip three.
Trump supporters are as energized as they have ever been. People started waiting up to get in here, waiting in line yesterday, spending all night out in that cold rain and snow. We may be seeing the high watermark of the Trump presidency. You mentioned the impeachment trial is over, the Russia investigation is over, the economy is strong, and the Democrats seem to be in disarray. But if this is the high watermark for the Trump presidency, it's only so high. The Gallup poll, his approval rating is 49%, its highest ever, but that's still less than half the country. Trump will have a tough battle for re-election no matter who the Democrats nominate. And trust me, his campaign knows it.
Now, I don't think his campaign's just taking it for granted, and they probably shouldn't, knowing how evenly divided the split is. But for a reporter to say that he's in for a tough battle, no matter who the Democrats nominate, and his campaign knows it, How does he know? How does he know it won't be a disaster all the way through to the election? Chris Hayes last night, he's on MSNBC, and I forget the name of the arena that President Trump was in with the thousands and thousands of people. But he was across the street at a, it seemed more like a town hall. He was kind of standing and talking to the crowd, and they were just, it was a smaller crowd. They were very quiet. He was acknowledging the fact that there's quite a few Democrats who are worried right now. And so here he is talking about how President Trump is vulnerable. This is clip four.
The Trump campaign would be more than happy to have you believe that the president, again, right across the street right now, is some kind of colossus. And that, by the way, is how he is planning to win. He's planning to win by projecting that very idea. That he is here, it's why he's here in New Hampshire tonight, right? There's no contested Republican primary. He doesn't have to be here. The idea is to literally intimidate Democrats, to scare them. Now, the president is many things. He's a bigot. He is a liar. He's a narcissist. But above all else, from the day that he inherited his daddy's business and much of his fortune, he has been a con man. You can ask nearly anyone who's ever done business with the guy. That's fundamentally what he is. That's his core. He's a con man.
That's a news anchor on MSNBC saying that the president's a con man who's there. He's there in Manchester to intimidate and to scare Democrats. He's evil, remember. He's Hitler. And more recently, one even compared him to Satan. So this is Satan. Satan incarnate. He's up in New Hampshire, and he's trying to intimidate those bad Democrats. Here's one. Just listen to this one. This is the last one from Chris Hayes, clip five.
But the idea that this is some terrifyingly popular juggernaut is just not borne out by the facts. The stuff he's actually doing, almost all of it is wildly unpopular.
So who is the con man? The stuff that he's actually doing, the stuff that President Trump is actually doing, almost all of it, says Chris Hayes, is wildly unpopular. He says this across the street from lines, thousands of people in line, spending the night to get into an arena to hear Donald Trump. I think there's some things he's doing that are quite popular, wildly popular. But they're all nervous. They're all worried. And some of the talking heads, as you hear there, they're trying to comfort the Democrats. They've had such a difficult last couple of weeks. But look, you look at the party following the Iowa caucus, the Democrat Party being in a state of disarray, as I said about Elizabeth Warren walking into the diner. Nobody really does much of anything. Joe Biden evidently is in a pretty much a nosedive. And then you've got the party, the Democrat Party, panicking over the thought of Bernie Sanders, the socialist, winning the nomination. And quite a few people speculating that he's going to be cheated out of the nomination again. Look, we're not in the prognostication business any more than some of those talking heads. But the fact that they would rule out, that they would just rule out that he's well on his way to victory, or that he isn't, he's unpopular. I think that Hayes went on to say that he's vulnerable politically. He's beatable. He wants you to believe he's strong, but he isn't. And again, when you think about the prophecy regarding Jeroboam the second there, 2 Kings 14, there is some strength there. There certainly is some popularity there. There certainly is an expansion, a temporary resurgence even. And we've written about that through and through. In any event, as I said last week, you had, following the State of the Union address, you had the acquittal on Wednesday, you had the president taking his victory lap on Thursday, where he just unloaded on the Obama administration and all of the administrative state officials that have been persecuting his campaign and his presidency. And he is riding high. We'll see. We'll see if this is the high watermark or if he continues to gain more and more support. When we come back, we'll look at some of the most dramatic events that are happening even in this calendar year, just these first 6 or 7 weeks of 2020. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The Correspondence Course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
We're less than 2 months into the calendar year, and just look at what has happened already. Right at the start of the year, you had the attack on the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad, and then those retaliatory strikes on those Iranian militia sites. And then that led into that dramatic drone strike. What was that, January 3rd or 4th, I think it was? Qassem Soleimani, taken out along with quite a few other terrorists, and no collateral damage either. And of course, all the commentators who then followed all of that saying that we're surely in the midst of a regional war with Iran. There was the missile strike, I guess, that just landed in the sand. And then after that, the Iranians were so scared that the U.S. would answer back that they destroyed a commercial airliner over Tehran. Just the first few days of January. And then you get into the month of February, as we covered on this program. This was just a couple weeks ago. President Trump and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu unveiling what President Trump has called the deal of the century. As I said on the program, as Melanie Phillips brought out, it's more of an ultimatum for the Palestinians. It's a take it or leave it. It's their last chance, said President Trump and Jared Kushner. And judging by Mahmoud Abbas's response, He said, 1,000 times no. No is my response. Never will I agree to this. And so we've seen these efforts, these attempts before to make peace in the Middle East. It's gone on now for well over 20 years. And why have so many presidents and prime ministers, why have so many diplomats and peacemakers failed to bring peace to the Middle East? Well, the peace process, the one that works, that's to be established by Jesus Christ and the God family. January also, we saw the Australian bushfires take out large swaths of territory in Australia, oppressive heat to go with it. Quite a few of those fires started by arsonists, which the left-wing media didn't want to cover. But that's the truth. That's what's happened. And now you get some of the other extremes. Here in the month of February, I got an email from one of our listeners who talked about wading through torrential floods from rains, from torrential downpours. And you can read in Amos 4, verses 7 through 8, about God sending drought to one city and floods to another. And that's been the trend worldwide. We've seen those kinds of things all over the world. And yet all the commentators, all of the talking heads, they want to blame it on climate change, which is an easy out. It's so easy to blame climate change. And yet think about, like I said on the program we taped earlier today, think about what the Bible, how much the Bible has to say about weather-related catastrophes and so-called natural disasters. It's in the Old Testament, in the New Testament. It's in the beginning of the books. It's at the end in Revelation. Jesus Christ talked about it in the Gospels. And yet people want to blame it on climate change. And you had all the Hollywood celebrities the other night, surprise, surprise, giving their speeches about climate change and hate Trump. Climate change, hate Trump. Vladimir Putin, he announced last month that he's making sweeping changes to Russia's constitution. He fired the parliament. He's the czar for life. This is all this year, and we're not even 7 weeks into it. He's the czar of all the Russians for another decade or more, says Bloomberg. Now he's up there with President Xi in China. The dictators are in place to lead the kings of the East. And so all that we're lacking, really, is that strong man in Germany. But now you see Germany in turmoil. You see Germany in the midst of a political crisis. You see mainstream parties, just like we covered in the first segment, reaching out to the fringe, reaching out to the extremists. Because, well, the way they view it, they have no choice. And those far right and far left parties are gaining in popularity. People are disgruntled. People are unhappy. They want new leadership. They want strong leadership. Chancellor Merkel's already announced that she's not going to seek re-election. She's going to stand down. And then now her chosen successor, as Richard Palmer wrote about last night in the Trumpet Brief, she's resigned. So who's the next leader? The CDU's not planning to get a new leader until this summer. So this is a pretty significant period of uncertainty in German politics. Leaderless Germany. What happens in Germany when there's political instability? History informs. Germany, as I said yesterday, it's only had 9 chancellors since the end of World War II. And other Western nations have had 15 to 20 to 30 sometimes. I think Italy's had over 30 leaders since the end of World War II. Germany's had 9. But now they're in political disarray. So they want a strong leader. They want a strong leader to help bring Europe together. not just because of the authoritarians to the east, but because of the turmoil following Brexit. And this was something that Herbert W. Armstrong, he was on top of this before, not just before Brexit, before the European Union even came along. Before the European Union, it was Herbert Armstrong saying, there's going to be a union of nations to come together in Europe, and Britain's not going to be a part of it. And almost all of that's been fulfilled. It just needs to be downsized to 10 kings or kingdoms. Everything else, it's been spot on. And yet, even as Britain exits with a sense of optimism and national pride, you see the struggles over Scotland, now Northern Ireland, and then you see its royal family. The fall of the British royal family, that's from September of 2017. My father wrote about it also in the New Throne of David. You know all about Prince Andrew. Now, that goes back to December of last year, but still, it's just in the last 3 months. And then Harry and Meghan. That was a few weeks ago. And then this morning, we find out that it looks like the first divorce is about to happen among the Queen's grandchildren, Peter Phillips. He's the son of Princess Anne. She's the second child of Queen Elizabeth. But Peter Phillips, his Canadian wife, Autumn, she wants to separate. She wants to go the way of Meghan. She wants to follow Meghan back to Canada. And according to press reports here, Phillips is apparently he's shocked by the news. One friend is quoted in the press as saying he thought he was happily married and had the perfect family with two lovely daughters, but he's now in total shock. Two daughters, 9 and 7 years of age. Savannah, the oldest, she was the Queen's first great-grandchild. Notice this. This is a friend of Phillips. He said, it's the last thing that the Queen needs after all her recent troubles. And you get the feeling that the royal family is falling apart. You get the feeling. Now, who wrote about this? Years ago. You go back even before the trumpet. Mr. Armstrong was talking about it in the early 1980s, following the marriage between Charles and Diana. Who wrote about this before it actually happened? Tomorrow's news today. Here's someone today, an insider, saying, you get the feeling that the royal family is falling apart. That's the trumpet headline from September of 2017. Tomorrow's news today. Well, don't forget about the impeachment farce, that all happened in this year as well, this calendar year, at least the trial. The investigation was last year. But the trial, that was supposed to finalize the audacious attempt to overturn the results of two elections, the last one and then this next one. And that's backfired, hasn't it? It's back to the point where you have the Democratic Party in disarray, as I say. But you look at these attacks, these plots made behind closed doors, the leaks. You go back to when they voted on whether or not they were going to have more witnesses, and then the night before they voted on the conviction or whether or not he was going to be convicted or acquitted. And both nights, there were these explosive bombshell leaks. Just the night before, John Bolton's going to say this. And then there were more revelations from John Bolton. Everything carefully coordinated, just like it was with Vindman and the whistleblower. And President Trump, to his credit, he's trying to drain the swamp. He's trying to fire off some of these people or fire them and reduce the size of the NSC and just get them out of the White House. They're all just there eavesdropping and leaking. What a way to run the government. There was a talk radio host last week, who this was from the U.S., who said that he was commenting on just how close, again, think of some of the things my father's written in recent years, but he commented on how close America came to being a police state. He said we were so close to the point of never having a free and fair election again. And then I played that clip for you on Friday from Devin Nunes, who said, I've been telling my Republican colleagues, why even talk to the press? Why talk to them? They're the enemy. They're working against the United States of America. They're on the other team. They're on the other side. Don't waste your time. On yesterday's program, we talked about the coronavirus, this epidemic. What is it now? Over 40,000, I think it is, that have contracted this disease. Over 1,000 that have died because of it. We went through the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse booklet, or at least some of the content from it. We showed you that footage, that frightening footage from China, these women being dragged out of their houses and into vans and off to who knows where. This is Fox News last night commenting on that disturbing footage, clip one.
There is disturbing new video coming out of China showing at least two women being dragged out of an apartment building by what appear to be police officers wearing masks. The women are trying to resist but are clearly overmatched and overpowered. And as the women are put in the bus, you can hear the heartrending sound of children screaming, babies crying, and a man trying to defend the women is also being pushed back. We have not independently verified the video, but it coincides with numerous reports saying China is rounding up the infected in Wuhan and taking them to internment camps. China puts the death toll officially now at 1,016 by their count, with over 42,000 infected.
Rounding up the wounded and taking them off to internment camps. This is 2020. This is our very modern age, and yet your Bible prophesies of some very disturbing scenes to happen in the last days. I mentioned yesterday, Ezekiel 38:22, and I will plead against him with pestilence and with blood. God is pleading. We also went through Revelation 6, a couple verses anyway, those seven seals of Revelation, the first four seals of which are known as the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, representing religious deception and war and famine and disease. These are for the last days. You look at these four horsemen, the three riders, and then the fourth, the anemic-looking horseman that represents disease, and the Bible says it'll slay the fourth part of the earth. So what we're seeing today is just a tiny part of the overall picture. That's what we've got to be preparing for. We've got to be emotionally and mentally and spiritually, even physically prepared for what's coming. Revelation isn't the only book that talks about disease epidemics. Jesus Christ talks about famine and pestilence. In the Gospels, this is New Testament theology. How come you don't hear about this in the traditional Christian world? Why won't the evangelicals speak of this? This is what the Bible prophesies. So many of them are deluding themselves into thinking that the Israelite nations, the United States, Britain, and Judah, or the little Israeli state, they delude themselves into thinking that our nations can do no wrong. That God's benignly smiling down upon us. What did Jesus say that we ought to be doing at this moment? Matthew 24, verse 37, it says, "But as the days of Noah were, so also shall the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and knew not until the flood came and took them all away. So shall also the coming of the Son of Man be." So Noah, he made the most of his years in the wilderness. all the mocking and the ridicule, 100 years of it, and yet he just kept building. And he was surrounded. He was surrounded by people who were lost in the present, who did not discern the signs of the times until it was too late. It says in verse 44, "Therefore be you also ready, for in such an hour as you think not, the Son of Man comes." And so now is the time to draw closer to God, to study Bible prophecy. When God says to watch world events, we'll come to it in just a second in Luke 21, he's talking about world events as they relate to Bible prophecy. When the Bible talks about religious deception and war and famine and disease, well, when you look at the world today and you see those things, then you know it's close. It's even at the door. My father had a recent Key of David program on this subject. You know how close we're getting. That's why God wants us to watch. You know the time, Paul said to the brethren at Rome. Therefore, it's high time to awake out of sleep, knowing the times we're in. We need to be awake like never before. We need to be springing out of the bed, so to speak, and just launching into our days of productivity. It's high time, he said. Are you watching world events the way that Jesus admonished us to? Let's look at this. Luke chapter 21, the book of Luke 21 and verse 32, it says, "Verily I say unto you, this generation shall not pass away until all be fulfilled." This generation, our generation, it's all about to be fulfilled. Verse 34, it says, "And take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged with surfeiting and drunkenness and the cares of this life, and so that day come upon you unawares. For as a snare shall it come on all them that dwell on the face of the whole earth." It's going to come at the sudden, unexpected hour. To the people of this world, they're going to be caught totally by surprise because they're going to be so caught up in riotous living and the cares of this present evil world. They're not going to be thinking about God's work or God's message as it goes out to the world. They're going to be mocking the truth of God, specifically the prophecies of God. And yet Jesus says to us, "Watch you, therefore, and pray always, that you may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man." What Christ is saying here is that unless we are zealously watching and praying, we will not be ready. We won't be ready for Christ's return. All of these prophecies will be, they're going to be fulfilled right before our eyes, and yet we're completely and totally in the dark if we weren't watching and praying always. Like I say, we've got to be studying the Bible. We've got to be studying Bible prophecy, or else we're just not going to know what to look for, what to watch for. We need to understand Bible prophecy. These are not wild-eyed, fanatical prognostications. This is the sure word of Bible prophecy. This is God's truth. Pray earnestly. Pray always. Pray that you may be accounted worthy to escape. 1 Peter 4, a couple more passages here. 1 Peter 4, verse 1. It says, "For as much then as Christ has suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves likewise with the same mind. For he that has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin." We need to be armed. We need to be equipped. We need to put on the armor of God. We need to let the mind of Jesus Christ in. Verse 7 continues, "But the end of all things is at hand. Be you therefore sober and watch unto prayer." Be sober, watch, prayerfully watch. Know the prophecies of God so you know what to look for and then get on your knees and ask God to help you understand what's happening, to see where it's headed. And let it serve as a motivation to change, to grow, to overcome. My father writes, we've given this quote so many times before, but it says, the fact that Christ's return is so near should change our behavior. The knowledge of Christ's imminent return should make us urgent spiritually. The fact that we're getting so close, the fact that there's disease epidemics, that there's drought, floods, fires, all these weather upsets, all of these wars and rumors of wars, the violence, the conflict between nations, within families, the conflict in government, between political parties, mainstream parties reaching out to the far right or the far left, reaching out to terrorist organizations, appeasement. We're seeing all of these things. It's a dangerous world. And Paul said it's only going to get worse. It's going to get a lot worse before it finally gets so much better. Let me conclude by going through Psalm 91. I think I just quickly read through a couple of these verses yesterday, but we can go back and get a little more context. That's the nice thing about daily radio. You get to continue the study, to go a little deeper from one day to the next. But in Psalm 91 and verse 1, it says, "He that dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God. In Him will I trust." You look at all of the so-called solutions that man has come up with. None of it's worked. You would think there'd be more people on earth today saying, "Look, we've tried and tried and tried, but we've got to look to God now. He's our refuge. He is our fortress. He's the one I'm going to trust. Only God can save us." That's what the commentators and the talking heads and the educators of today, that's what they all need to know. Verse 4, it says, "He shall cover you with His feathers, and under His wings shall you trust. His truth shall be your shield and buckler. You shall not be afraid for the terror by night, nor for the arrow that flies by the day." You don't have to be afraid of terrorism or from wars and rumors of wars. All of this danger, all of this violence, it's prophesied for our day. And yet God says in this psalm, "Nor for the pestilence that walks in darkness, nor for the destruction that wastes at noonday." It says, "A thousand shall fall at your side and 10,000 at your right hand, but it shall not come near to you." See how strong and bold is our faith. How courageous are we? Can we go before God and claim this promise? Can we know that even in the midst of a dangerous world that's just getting more dangerous and more dark with each passing day, can we go to God with this prayer and know that He'll still let our lights shine in this dark world? He'll back us up even when the persecution does start coming. We're going to need this kind of faith. We're going to need this kind of protection, this kind of refuge. And God is there to provide it if we'll just look to Him, if we'll just trust Him. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with some feedback that's come in over the last couple of weeks. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to submit feedback, you can do that by emailing td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days?
This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to The Trumpet Magazine. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is The Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
We've only been on the YouTube live stream, I think, since September or October of last year, and it was only a few weeks ago, maybe it was a month or two, when we started to include that on our Facebook page as well. Richard was saying that yesterday's show, the one on the coronavirus, that it had 278 one-minute-plus views on Facebook. This is people that are tuning in to watch it, or at least a good part of it, and not just leave after a few seconds. But that 278 compares to what has typically been about 120 to 200, so a pretty strong showing yesterday. Some of that might have to do with the subject matter, the coronavirus, which even if you look at some of the articles we've posted on the Trumpet.com website, when you put a disease epidemic together with the Bible or Bible prophecy, it does get some attention, which would suggest that people are looking for answers. They want to know why these events are happening, and good for them. At least they're curious. At least their heads are not completely buried in the sand. So some encouraging numbers there. If you haven't heard that program or watched it, you can see it on the YouTube page or at the trumpet.com website as a podcast. This was an email we got following the Birmingham pack just a week and a half ago. It says, I just wanted to touch base to say how much I enjoyed the pack last Sunday. Your presentation was absolutely wonderful in my humble opinion. It is the directness of the PCG message that continues to grab me. That and the accuracy. Herbert Armstrong was no ordinary man. I feel sure that he truly was an apostle that God promised. In the end times. It says, during your presentation, you made a point that struck me. It was absolutely meant for me. You said, you can't force your view on people. If they ask, then as the Bible tells us, answer them with enthusiasm. I will bear this in mind henceforth. Once again, I so enjoyed the meeting. It was a privilege to finally meet you guys in person. The very best to you and to all of the wonderful staff at the PCG. And that comes in from Coventry, just down the road from Edstone. This one here says, it's from Australia. It says, just want to thank you again for all the great work on your TD radio show. Truly, you are my only trusted source of real news. Whether I listen to you at the gym, in the car, or perhaps on a daily walk, you are both my information source and inspiration source. Also, I really love your mini Bible studies. I appreciate the comments and coverage you did on my country and how you reported on our record-breaking drought followed by catastrophic bushfires. But since then, we have also had record-breaking heat waves in Sydney with temperatures reaching 53 degrees Celsius. And now, today, torrential rain and flooding across the same region. This is exactly what I was saying in the previous segment. Just like it says in Amos 4, verses 7 to 9. A little bit more in the way of feedback. This one here says, pestilence, famines, flooding, cataclysmic events all over the world, right in line with Bible prophecy. Another one writes, this is the only radio program that I listen to. I wish the world would follow suit. Another one here says, good morning. I wish more people would listen to this program. I guess a lot of people wish that more people would tune in than they do worldly programs. Thanks to God for this podcast, prophecy fulfilled by what is happening in the world today. Another one greets us from Australia. And then a few here in response to Monday's show, I forget the title of that one, says, Wow, Mr. Fleury, I see I need to get sprinting hard. This race is just about over, and the biggest sign is that Satan is working 10,000 times harder to distract God's people and those of us working toward that direction once again. The wake-up sirens are definitely sounding at a higher velocity than ever before. How anyone can even think that our Lord is delaying his return when every single day is one day closer than the day before? It doesn't ever do the opposite. Another one here says, totally awesome truth. To know the truth doesn't make anyone right with God, but to do the truth is what makes us a true Christian. Beautiful truth, Mr. Fleury. Thank you. It says, plus, it is the biggest warning to everyone who knows or has known the truth. Further on here, it says, thanks to God and thank you and the staff for all of your hard work. Another one writes, good morning, KPCG FM listeners. I'm listening in from Durban, South Africa. Another one here, listening in from Bathurst, New Brunswick, Canada. Another one here who says, good news coverage plus accurate prophetic forecasting, one of a kind. This was in response to the TV program over the weekend, Jude's Urgent Prophecy, that, as I said yesterday, brought in, or maybe it was Monday. In any event, it brought in 160 requests for the Jude booklet and also the Peter booklet. It says, thanks for all the hard work and dedication. The manna was good. Another one, truly seeing how many rebellious people there are towards God brings tears to my eyes, and yet we must watch, continue to watch and pray always. This one here came in response to the trumpet brief, or a signpost, I think it was, last week on conquering spiritual lethargy. And it says, I feast on your briefs always, timely instruction. I can only say I needed this reminder every Sabbath, every Bible study, all the words we are taught must remain vigilant. Thank you. That comes from Arkansas. And another one here says, I read your article on spiritual lethargy today, and it really hit home for me. Lethargy had set in, and your article was just the jumpstart I needed to get going again. Thank you so much for this absolutely wonderful and loving reminder to get back on track. I'm so grateful for your article. God bless you and your wonderful staff. Please keep up the good work and keep fighting the good faith, or the good fight, I should say. And this goes back to the trumpet brief from the start of last week. I guess it would have been Wednesday, the middle of last week. It was Mr. Hilliker's brief on the State of the Union address and just some of the shenanigans going on with respect to the address, and Speaker Pelosi ripping up the speech behind the president. But it says here, thank you, this is to Mr. Hilliker, thank you for the timely trumpet brief. Yes, I did watch the State of the Union speech. It was very moving, seeing how God is giving this country a temporary resurgence by the hand of Jeroboam. Since President Trump has become president of the U.S., we in America can feel good about our country again, like it was when I was growing up. I remember when a president would give a speech, everyone would give him the respect to his office, or give the respect to his office and listen. We loved our country, the Founding Fathers, the Constitution, and our history as a nation. It did give us a sense of pride to be an American. President Trump is a flawed man, but it is amazing to see the growth and the prosperity, like you pointed out in the trumpet brief. Thank you again, and I appreciated the Trumpet Hour today as well. The Trumpet Hour, of course, plays every Wednesday and Friday. On Wednesday, it follows this program right at the top of the hour. And then at Friday in Oklahoma, it's toward the end of the day. I think it's about 10 p.m. here in the UK, and of course at different times all over the world. But you can get that program and, of course, these Trumpet Daily programs on the podcast at the website. You can get it downloaded to your device. You can watch it now on YouTube, the stream, and get some beautiful images and footage and stills and graphics as well. And as I said earlier, you can also see it streamed on Facebook as well. Well, we thank you for joining us on today's program. As always, you're listening to Stephen Fleury, And this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll see you tomorrow.